The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Balance of Power. We're halfway through the week together as we join you live from the nation's capital where something big just happened. Did you feel it? Ground shook a little bit. The House passed something. And passed it by a lot. 352 to 65. A new funding measure, you ask. A new budget for our country to keep the lights on past March. Maybe money for Ukraine, the billions they've been waiting for. No, I answer to all of them. This is legislation that could lead to a ban of TikTok. Now, boy, don't call it an outright ban. You'll hear from lawmakers on that. Remember, we talked about it. This is the mechanism that would force ByteDance to divest TikTok in a certain period of time. They give them 6 months or be banned. Don't ask me who will buy it. Don't ask me what Donald Trump's going to say, or the Senate for that matter. This sailed through the House. This has been moving quickly. The statement from Chuck Schumer next door, where people think maybe this might actually not be able to pass. Quote, the Senate will review the legislation when it comes over from the House. Unquote. The reaction from China, what you'd expect, resorting to hegemonic moves. As we hear from Beijing in recent years, this is from a spokesman for China's foreign ministry. In recent years, though the U.S. has never found any evidence of TikTok posing a threat to U.S. national security, it has never stopped going after TikTok. And will they complete the ban? Remember, there's a ban of federal employees using it on government phones. The Biden administration, or the campaign rather, is also on TikTok, and so is the Trump campaign. So maybe we're talking out of both sides of our mouths here in Washington. That would never happen, of course. Dan Flatley is with us from Capitol Hill, Bloomberg national security reporter. Because Dan, it's great to see you. This was done in the name of national security, right? They didn't want China collecting data on Americans. Is this going to pass in the Senate?
Yeah, Joe, absolutely. I mean, this was all done in the name of national security, as you said. And you mentioned that the path forward in the Senate is much less clear than, you know, what we just saw happen in the House, a big bipartisan vote. 352 votes in favor, 65 against. It's not very often that you see a bipartisan vote like that these days. Yeah. But you mentioned Senator Chuck Schumer's statement. Perhaps giving some hope to those who want to see this bill pass the Senate is the statement from Senators Mark Warner and Marco Rubio, the chair and vice chair of the Senate Intel Committee. They said that they were happy to see the House pass this bill and want to see something similar done in the Senate. They want to work to get this House passed bill through here. The problem is that, you know, that's two senators out of 100. They do have a lot of influence, but the Senate, you know, will probably work its own will on this. And as you know, Joe, any one senator can really gum up the works. So it's going to be a little bit of a different process over here.
Yeah, you know, I'm taken by the statement, Dan, by Maxwell Frost, to give us a sense where progressives are on this. He's taking this as a First Amendment issue, writing, quote, "This legislation is an infringement on our constitutional right to freedom of speech that also places a nearly impossible condition for the app to be sold within 6 months or less." He says it is unrealistic, unquote. Is there something to be said for that? Is that First Amendment argument going to be heard in the Senate?
It's possible. I mean, certainly that's something that Kentucky Senator Rand Paul intends to raise. He's said that already. You mentioned a couple of other issues there, Joe, which is the question of, is this enough time for ByteDance to find a buyer for TikTok?
Right.
It's a very valuable company at this point, much more valuable than it was a few years ago when then-President Donald Trump tried to ban it through a similar mechanism in the executive branch. 6 months is a very short time frame. Actually, it's a little bit shorter than that. It's about 5.5 months, technically. But if you look around, there's no buyer that has come forward yet. Maybe they're trying to keep their powder dry in that sense. But it would be very expensive, obviously. The other thing that you hear is that this just happened too quickly in the House. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, earlier when she announced that she would be voting against this, mentioned the fact that this just happened too quickly. Maxwell Frost also mentioned the fact that this happened too quickly, and that while they have concerns about data leakage to China and other things of that nature, this bill would not address those concerns in a workable way. So that's kind of what you hear from the opponents of this bill right now.
Yeah. Dan, great. Thank you for being up there for us today. Bloomberg's national security reporter, Dan Flatley, with us live from Capitol Hill, where it all just went down. The bill has passed that could lead to the ban of TikTok. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, just mentioned by Dan, issues a tweet. "I'm sorry. Susie hit me off of the door and said, you gotta start calling it X. It's not Twitter anymore. I'm still calling it Twitter. I'm voting no," she writes, "on the TikTok forced sale bill. The bill was incredibly rushed from committee to vote in 4 days with little explanation." That is pretty remarkable in Washington. She goes on to write, "There are serious antitrust and privacy questions here, and any national security concerns should be laid out to the public prior to a vote. Maybe that national argument has yet to be made." I'm Joe Matthew in Washington. Glad you're with us here. Our other big story brings us to the campaign trail. It's on, the rematch. I know we all felt smart on Super Tuesday and looked at what was impossible math for Nikki Haley. Certainly anyone else running against Joe Biden in terms of Dean Phillips. But when you actually reach that level and you can call them presumptive nominees, it's meaningful. And we got there last night. As we discussed, of course, it was a primary day. We talked about Georgia. And pretty interesting to look at the results here, as Joe Biden's victory in Georgia put him over the top. But he still showed some weakness here in the polls coming out of these contests. Donald Trump has his own challenges as well. Again, in the state of Georgia, Joe Biden's problem might be in the Midwest, as we've discussed, Michigan, Minnesota, the uncommitted movement, the protest vote that has been following him across the country. But this is going to be the nation's first presidential rematch in 70 years. We are actually doing this. The longest campaign in modern history. And the first rematch in 70 years. As we dig into this with Nancy Kaffer, a new voice on the program. I've been looking forward to talking with you, Nancy, editor of the Detroit Free Press editorial page. It's great to have you with us. Joe Biden's got some weaknesses. A lot of them have been discussed openly, certainly around the State of the Union address. It was all about his age, but his policies are bringing challenges for young progressives and voters of color. What's your view from Detroit, where Michigan is everything?
Thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to be here. I think that there were some really alarming results in Michigan's primary outcome. And I think you're seeing those uncommitted voters in spread to other states. You're seeing this movement spread. We're talking about a state where Donald Trump won by 10,000 votes in 2016 and Joe Biden won by 150,000 votes in 2020. These are really thin margins, particularly 2016. And there were 100,000 uncommitted voters in Michigan after a 3-week campaign to get this up and running. So this is, you know, Biden has been around. He's done this before. He's, I'm sure, concerned and is trying to figure out what he can do to turn these voters back to his cause.
He's got union workers to worry about as well. He's walking the picket mm-hmm. line as the first president to carry a sign with the UAW just months ago. And all I keep hearing, Nancy, is that the rank and file UAW are going to vote Trump. When you add these two together, knowing the razor thin margin we're talking about here, this is a potential problem. He's losing Michigan in Bloomberg's swing state poll. Does that accurately reflect the lay of the land there?
I think it's really hard to tell. I mean, yes, he's been consistently polling poorly here since last year. And, you know, it certainly caused for alarm. I think we are still several months out from the election. Inflation is going in a different direction. It's hard kind of, I mean, I know it's we're getting closer to the election, but it still is. We still got a lot of time for things to go differently. We've got a lot of time for folks to realize that walking into the polls, that this is a binary choice, that it's Joe Biden or Donald Trump, that there's not a sort of third fantasy candidate that they can select. If I were the Biden camp, I'd be worried. I'd be trying to do what I could to get Michigan back into my column, because there is no, if you look at that electoral map, I don't see a path for victory for him except for through the Midwest. Do you?
That is absolutely right, which is why we keep talking about it. I mean, he's just without Michigan, without Wisconsin. Ask Hillary Clinton how that's going to go. Here's a doozy, Nancy, and I can't figure it out. We can talk about economic polling all day long, and you can point me to inflation and higher prices, and I get it. But for Joe Biden to see no post-State of the Union bump in the polls, to me, is a screamer here. This was lauded as the speech of his lifetime last week. Even Republicans said, yeah, boy, he cleared the bar. He was yelling at us from the rostrum. We're not going to be talking about cognitive challenges here in the near term. But if you look at 538, yesterday's updated approval rating average is a new all-time low. What do you think about that?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's in trouble. I don't know how many. It's becoming clear with every poll. Like he has got to really campaign the hell out of these states. I mean, you know, in Hillary, can I say that? Can I say?
Yeah, you just did.
Okay, sorry. in print newspapers, we have a little more time to self-edit. I'm sorry.
Hey, I work in a newsroom. It's all good, Nancy.
In 2016, Hillary Clinton sort of famously didn't campaign in Michigan for 9 months, and that did not go well. I mean, similar issues in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. And again, we saw how that turned out. Those three states have voted in lockstep for, I want to say, at least 20 years, maybe more. So I think it's going to be also interesting to see, do these states split off this time? Is it, you know, as goes Wisconsin, so goes our nation? Like how does this all play out here? But yeah, he's got to get here. He's got to win these voters back or he's in big trouble. I mean, 100,000 voters is, it's a lot. It's a lot of people. And especially considering, again, the short period of time in which this uncommitted campaign got up and running. Now, typically you see about 20,000 people vote uncommitted in every presidential primary. I'm kind of curious about that. I didn't really realize it was such a phenomenon until this year when this campaign started. But yeah, you get about 20,000 people in every primary who choose uncommitted, except for some weird years where weird things happened in primaries, like in 2008 when Obama wasn't on the primary ballot here, like 300,000 people voted uncommitted as a proxy for Obama. But yeah, so 80 to 100,000 people here dissatisfied enough with Joe Biden's presidency to go out and make that choice. We also, you know, this was centered around Gaza, and we have the largest Arab American community in the country in Detroit. But our precinct level analysis after the primary showed that this wasn't contained to the more densely Arab American communities in Metro Detroit. That this was, you know, a problem at University of Michigan for Biden, for, you know, in East Lansing at Michigan State University, that these university communities with young progressives, not simply Arab American voters, which is, you know, as I think someone smarter than me said, not a lot of states have a high Arab American population, but most states have liberal college towns filled with young progressives. So sort of a more spreading problem.
Well, you really put your finger on something there, Nancy, in our last moment, speak to that, because we're not including issues that could be dogging Joe Biden that are economic related when it comes to young people, the promise of student loan forgiveness, the promise of legalizing cannabis, things that they heard on the way in that have not happened yet. That's part of the problem here, isn't it?
It is. But the other thing is he has moved a lot of domestic policy and he's got to get better at talking about it and better at convincing people that it's made a difference in their lives. It's we're in a weird world where people don't always evaluate the facts on the ground. How do we feel about the facts on the ground? How do we feel about things that have happened? Is a competing factor, but also telling people like, no, you're wrong, things went well for you isn't a winning strategy either. So I think he's got an incredibly difficult job to do, but he does need to start talking more and more convincingly about the things he has actually done for Americans if he wants to turn that tide.
Well, I'm glad you could come talk to us today, Nancy. Don't be a stranger. We'd like to stay in touch with you over the course of this campaign with The View from Detroit and from Michigan, where she is editor of the Detroit Free Press editorial page, one of the nation's great newspapers. Nancy Caffer, thank you for your insights.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers, they're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Here in Washington, we often talk about how difficult it is to come by a bipartisan effort to get anything through both chambers of Congress, frankly, which of course are controlled by Democrats in the Senate, Republicans in the House. And there's usually not a lot of bipartisanship to be found. But this TikTok bill that passed the House today did so on pretty remarkable bipartisan grounds. Mm-hmm. 352 people, Joe, voted for the bill, only
Amazing.
65 against.
Amazing. And it had to be a pretty overwhelming number. Under suspension, we needed two-thirds. Yep. They crossed that bar, cleared it. Isn't it amazing, though, these two different universes, because it's not clear that this could pass the Senate or that Chuck Schumer will even bring it to the floor.
Yeah, because, of course, some senators have expressed concern about what this means in regard to First Amendment rights,
yes,
potentially what precedent this could set for, say, U.S. companies that operate in other jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's concern that the youth vote may get mad if you take their TikTok away. The thing
warmer.
Is, though, lawmakers will tell you this is not a bill to ban TikTok. That would just be the consequence if TikTok is not divested from ByteDance, of course, the Chinese parent company. And that is the point that the House Democratic leader, Hakeem Jeffries, made earlier today. Take a listen.
I don't support a ban on TikTok. The legislation did not ban TikTok. It's simply a divestiture of TikTok so that this social media platform can be owned by an American company that would protect the data and the privacy of the American consumer from malignant foreign interests like the Chinese Communist Party.
Just don't call it a ban. As Seth Moulton schooled us the other day here around this time on this broadcast, the Democrat from Massachusetts talking about the vote here. Turn to Maxwell Frost if you want to really know how progressives feel. The Democrat from Florida saying in a statement, this legislation is an infringement on our constitutional right to freedom of speech that also places a nearly impossible condition on the app to be sold within 6 months or less. It's unrealistic, unquote. That's where we start our conversation with the ambassador. Been looking forward to seeing Mark Ginsburg. We tend to speak about geopolitics, and we might get there. But Mark Ginsburg, the former ambassador to Morocco, is also the founder and president of the Coalition for a Safer Web and is deeply involved in this conversation. Mr. Ambassador, welcome back to Bloomberg. It's great to see you. Should TikTok be banned?
I'm all in favor. I would have voted if I had a vote on this one. But let me, it's great to vote on these bills that actually will unfortunately die a long death in the courts when it's going to be challenged. And I'll explain to you why. We filed a lawsuit. Our organization filed a lawsuit, which this legislation is directed at both Apple and Google, to remove the TikTok app from their app stores. We did the same with Telegram because it was providing support for terrorism several years ago. The Ninth Circuit in California threw our case out on the basis that this type of interference would violate Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. So I'm one of those folks who says, yeah, let's go, but I have long experience understanding how complicated this is. Even though there is a legitimate reason to essentially divest TikTok from ByteDance and have it owned in the United States.
So a legitimate reason, perhaps, but legal questions and the legality around this is something that actually Brendan Carr, a commissioner over at the FCC, talked about earlier today on Bloomberg Surveillance. Just take a listen to what he told us this morning and then we'll have you respond.
This plainly is a conduct law, meaning we're acting because of the demonstrated malign national security threat of TikTok, not because of the content of anybody's speech. And the bill is narrowly tailored, which is key for First Amendment analysis, because it simply requires divestment, meaning the millions of Americans that love TikTok, I'm not one of them, but they can continue to use the application, but just in a more secure way.
So I guess, Ambassador, I kind of have a two-part question. One, is it narrowly tailored enough that potentially it would survive legal challenges? But also, isn't the narrow tailoring part of the concern you're hearing on the other side, which is that this is naming a specific private company in legislation targeting it? Is narrow both potentially a good thing and a bad thing?
I think this is a pile-on because if you flew to Beijing today, you would not be able to go on your phone and read anything from Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or whatever, because China bans all of those U.S. apps. So there's an issue of reciprocity here. That's number one. Number two, Kaylee, from the strictly legal point of view, and from as someone like me who works with all of these platforms and sees the content, the extremist content. I mean, TikTok is not the worst, but it's one of the great offenders. Give you an illustration. When the October 7th massacre occurred in Israel, Hamas used TikTok to retain influencers on TikTok to disseminate its propaganda operations into the U.S. Okay, now, that stinks to high heaven. The fact that TikTok has no algorithms or content moderation to stop that. And that's one of the problems. We've seen all sorts of extremist content on TikTok. It's not the innocent playground a lot of folks make it out to be, even if you argue about its Chinese ownership. But doesn't deal with that. This law does not solve that problem.
Ambassador Ginsburg, TikTok says it not only intends to exhaust all legal challenges, which we're talking about here, but a divestiture, it says, would also require approval by the Chinese government, which of course says it would firmly oppose a forced sale We heard from the Chinese today. You could have written this statement in advance. In fact, they did. They issued it before the vote took place. But what will that mean in this process?
I don't know why or how anyone is going to acquire TikTok in the United States, because the magic potion that makes TikTok TikTok is its unique algorithm. And you can't force the Chinese to divest the algorithm if it owns the company. And so no matter what happens here, I don't know who is going to want to put up billions of dollars if the Chinese refuse to provide you the secret gateway to what makes TikTok TikTok.
Well, there's also the question, Ambassador, of who would be allowed to buy TikTok. This is not going to be a cheap acquisition someone has to make, in the hundreds of billions of dollars. So realistically, it would have to be a larger company that would try to buy it, right? But big tech antitrust is kind of a big thing here in Washington. I can't imagine any big tech company being allowed to get bigger very easily.
Gosh, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, is Mark Zuckerberg going to go off and buy it? Is it going to be someone else? Is Trump's Truth Social company going to go ahead and buy it? I mean, the problem here is that there is the antitrust issue, and most importantly, the anti-competitive issue that is going to be set up should anyone acquire it. That's what I'm saying. Anyone who's sitting here and worried about this becoming instantaneous law and bye-bye TikTok, let's put it, I think we have a lot more gray hair on my head before I see this happen.
I'm surprised you didn't mention Larry Ellison. Oracle is already hosting TikTok's U.S. data ambassador. Wouldn't that be an obvious buyer?
Yeah, it's possible. But that, again, depends on whether Larry Ellison is going to be able to convince China to let him buy the algorithm. And I just don't know. You have to break this down, guys. You have the customer base, okay, and you have the dissemination through the servers, but you got to have the algorithm that permits the videos to be curated the way they are. And if someone can develop the AI here in the United States and substitute it for the algorithm that is owned by ByteDance, that's going to be an important accomplishment to justify the sale.
All right, Ambassador Mark Ginsburg, always great to have you on the program. Of course, he is the founder and president of Coalition for a Safer Web. We appreciate your time today, sir. And now we want to turn to our political panel. Jeannie Shanzano is with us, Bloomberg Politics contributor, alongside Lester Munson, BGR Group co-head of the International Practice and a Republican Strategist. Thank you both so much for joining us. Lester, first to you, considering overwhelmingly House Republicans supported this measure, despite perhaps the feelings of former President Donald Trump, do you think Republicans in the Senate will do the same? Is this going to be able to pass the other chamber?
I think, you know, it's a great question, Kayleigh. I think if this comes to a vote, and that's a decision for Democrats, to be clear, if it comes to a vote, I think Republicans are going to be hard-pressed to not vote for it. In other words, I think Republicans will do much in the Senate, will be much like House Republicans, and will vote for this. Despite what, you know, President Trump's ambivalence or even leaning in favor of TikTok here, I think because that's where their base is. That's where kind of the voters are. There's a lot of skepticism of TikTok and the China connections. And I think and if it comes to a vote, that's where senators will be.
Jeannie, you're surrounded by young people every day as a professor at Iona University. And I wonder your thoughts on this broadly. We just asked Ambassador Ginsburg if this should be banned, if you actually agree with this movement to begin with. When you hear from the Maxwell Frosts of the world, this is a violation of the First Amendment. And a lot of folks see this legislation as a setup. What's your answer, though, to the national security worry?
You know, I think the national security concerns are obviously real. I do wish that we had more information on that aspect of it. You know, this has been one of the challenges here, because I think my concern, and I wouldn't say this is the concern of the young people I talk to, my concern is, okay, you ban TikTok, Is there truly no other way for China or the Communist Party to get our private information? The reality is we are living in a country with no real privacy concerns, controls, or regulation. And, you know, there's just been some really good research out showing how easy it is, and I put easy in quotes, to gather this information for somebody with the means, with the money, and with the interest. And so I worry that, like so much else in Washington, D.C., what we're getting here is a, you know, a slight nip at something that is very popular right now, going against the Communist Party. But I'm not convinced yet how effective it will actually be in, you know, really securing us as a nation and securing our privacy as individuals. And of course, I do have First Amendment concerns, but, you know, national security has got to be, you know, the most important concern.
But Kaylee, aren't all of Genie's students just going to VPN around a ban anyway? Isn't that what we've learned?
That's the question. Will they still be able to access the platform, assuming the ban goes in place?
Of course.
This isn't supposed to be a ban bill.
Should this happen? Should they not divest? Should this even become law? This is a backdoor to TikTok.
But using a VPN to get to TikTok kind of underscores the perhaps desperation to be on TikTok and the addiction that some people have. And Jeannie, as we talk about, your students are just youth in general, a group that, say, President Biden is hoping will reelect him come November. Could there actually be political consequence to lawmakers doing this, to Biden signing it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why we've seen, in part, why we've seen Donald Trump say, hey, you know, maybe not so fast. I think, you know, Donald Trump, for monetary reasons and also for vote reasons, we're looking at 170 million people on this app. But, you know, just what you guys are talking about, the VPN, again, another example. How effective is this, really, if a five-year-old can work around it in 3 seconds? So that's what makes me think that this is more rhetorical than effective in terms of, you know, really really securing our national security interests and also our privacy interests.
Yeah. You know how to do that, right? I don't know how to do that. You know how to do that?
Well, this is something the ambassador was bringing up. You can't use a lot of stuff in China.
Right.
When I went to China, I used a VPN to use my stuff in China.
See, Kaylee will hook you up if this actually happens. Don't worry. Where is producer James going to get his golf tips? Where will we get our recipes? Right? TikTok.
Yeah.
I don't know. The jury's still out on this one. Thanks to our panel, Lester and Jeannie. They'll be back with more next here on Balance of Power, only on Bloomberg.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
Welcome to Balance of Power. It is the Wednesday edition. I'm Joe Matthew in Washington alongside Kaylee Lyons, and the rematch is set. One of our top stories today, Joe Biden, Donald Trump, a majority of voters have said they do not want in a rematch, are now the presumptive nominees. You cannot deny the math. The general election, while we feel like it really started in New Hampshire, I guess officially begins today, Kaylee. And it's going to be a long one.
It's going to be a marathon, not a sprint. This will be about 8 months that we will be in a general election campaign between these two and whoever else is involved, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., potentially a third labels ticket, whoever that may be. But the question I have is, we are talking about a former president and a current president. The name ID, the name recognition has to be as close to perfect as you could possibly get. And a lot of people probably have their minds made up already of what they think of these two individuals. So what can you change over the course of even an 8 month long period?
Making it pretty difficult for both of these candidates to move the needle beyond what they're walking in with. It's a really great point. And when you see the polls here, 538 telling us today that Joe Biden, who seemed to not clear the bar but leap over it in the State of the Union address, having heard from Republicans and Democrats on this program agreeing with that, got no bump from the State of the Union address, as history would tend to provide. In fact, 538 says updated approval rating average is now a new all-time low for Joe Biden.
Pretty incredible. So on this note, we want to turn to one of our politics gurus here at Bloomberg. Gregory Cordy is with us, who covers national politics for us, here with us in the Washington, D.C. studio. So, Gregory, the matchup is set. It's the matchup we all knew was coming, as it was, and pretty much the entire American voting populace knew that they were ultimately going to have to choose to decide for one of these two or maybe not show up at all. So what realistically can change now that the general election cycle has begun between now and November?
Yeah, when we talked last week, it was just after Super Tuesday. This felt like anticlimactic Tuesday, right? We all knew who the nominees were going to be. And yet, our story on this matchup is one of the most read stories on the Bloomberg Terminal. And I suspect part of that is our global audience is just now sort of waking up to the realization that there are no off-ramps here. This is the matchup we're going to have. It was baked in the cake all along. And as you say, these are two of the best known public figures, never mind politicians, in American life going back over the past half century. There aren't many undecided voters. And so to answer Joe's question, I think the answer is not voters deciding whether they support Trump or Biden, but whether they show up or not show up. And that's particularly a problem on the Democratic side, where there does seem to be a dampening of enthusiasm for Joe Biden compared to 4 years ago. And the job for Democrats and for President Biden is to remind voters why they voted against Donald Trump in the first place.
No off-ramps, says Gregory Cordy. We're just Thelma and Louise right off the cliff. So look at what happened in Georgia last night. For Donald Trump specifically, Georgia is what put Joe Biden over the top. And he won Georgia, people might forget, by 11,779 votes. Guess what? Nikki Haley got 77,000 yesterday. I know you're going to tell me that there was early voting, but that's got to mean something.
Yeah, it's absolutely. A large part of that is early voting, people who voted before she dropped out. And she remained on the ballot even after she dropped out. And so there were a number of those. By the way, Chris Christie got something like 1%. So there are candidates who remain on and continue to get votes, if not delegates. And yes, to answer your question, there is a question on the Republican side. We just talked about the enthusiasm problem that Democrats have. But for Republicans, one of the questions is, do these traditional Republicans come home to Trump? Or do they do what a lot of them did 4 years ago, and that is say, look, we need a change. We need to sort of reset here. And hopefully then we can get a Republican we like better in 2024. Now that that hasn't happened, do they vote for Trump again and hope maybe 2028 brings a more traditional style Republican candidate?
Gregory, thank you. It's great to have you with us. Anticlimactic Tuesday, are we going with that? No off-ramps.
Just not super, I guess.
Not super at all.
Just any other Tuesday.
I didn't think Super Tuesday was either. The bumper sticker, 2024, no off-ramps. Let's reassemble the panel with that uplifting thought. Jeannie Shanzano is back, Democratic analyst, Bloomberg politics contributor, joined by Republican strategist Lester Munson at BGR Group. Trying to lift you up here, Jeannie, but this is what we have. How does Joe Biden try to leverage the moment here if he can't get a bump out of the State of the Union.
Yeah, no bump. You and Kaylee make me very depressed. This is going to be a hard 8 months, I think. You know, I think what we're going to see on both sides, because they are both as wildly unpopular as Gregory just was talking about, is they are going to be talking about, hey, wait a minute, you may not love me, but look at the other guy. He's dangerous. He's, you know, incompetent. He's stupid. You know, all of the things. So I think it's going to be an incredibly negative campaign. I think we're already seeing that, and it's just going to get worse from here. So I guess we do have to buckle up, to use your Thelma and Louise reference.
Sorry. Yeah, I didn't take that back.
And I'm sure, Lester, you're buckled up as well. To the point Joe was asking Gregory about the 77,000 Nikki Haley voters in Georgia, and sure, take some of that off for early voting before she actually left the race. But even when she was in the race, we were seeing that there was, what, 20 to even 40% of Republican primary voters who were specifically making the choice not to pick Donald Trump. How worried should he be about trying to draw those voters back into his camp over the next 8 months?
Well, that's clearly his biggest challenge. And in addition to, you know, kind of driving out his base voters, he's got to appeal to those Nikki Haley voters. There's an obvious move here for Donald Trump if he wants to do it, which is persuade Nikki Haley to be his running mate. This is, you know, effectively what Joe Biden did 4 years ago. He went and found his toughest critic in the primary, Kamala Harris, and made and brought her inside the tent. Donald Trump could do that. If he can do that and demonstrate some flexibility, I think that that changes the dynamic for him and makes his victory a little more likely, maybe substantially more likely in November.
We talked about the No Labels effort a couple of days into the Super Tuesday week, because that was going to be the moment. They held a secret ballot. They say they're going to run someone, and well, we still don't have anyone. There have been reports about names, Jeannie, and I wonder if you're still waiting for something to emerge that could be a game changer, or if your focus is locked on RFK Jr., who today has the nation in a lather over his potential vice presidential pick.
Bring it on, Aaron Rodgers, Jesse Ventura. It's going to be a fun one. You know, I can't help but again say that for No Labels, or quite frankly, any other third party, non-party, they don't like to describe themselves as a party. The idea that they are going to be able to get electoral votes is really difficult to imagine. And so what they will be doing is spoiling. And that remains a big, big problem. So, you know, I would love to see where the sponsorship, the money for No Labels is coming from, what the rules are going to be, and all those kinds of things that they say they're going to tell us. So hopefully we get that information. But I think spoiling is really the watchword when it comes to No Labels. And I understand that's not what they wanted to do.
So, Lester, do you agree on the spoiling point, and who is there any candidate that No Labels could put up, any ticket, two candidates, Republican, Democrat, that they could put up that would not act in that spoiling capacity? Is there any world in which it actually might work?
Kaylee, as a lifelong Chicago Bears fan, I can tell you that Aaron Rodgers is a game changer, and I don't necessarily mean that in a good way. No, he would be the ultimate game changer. Would No Labels be a spoiler?
Careful of the
probably,
Achilles.
Probably. But if there were ever a year where a third party on the ticket could make a difference and get some electoral votes, it's this one. The two main candidates are so unpopular that there's just this. There seems to me that there's a real lane for a vibrant third party candidacy to make a difference here. So I wouldn't. While I suspect Jeannie's correct, it'll end up spoiling. I would not rule out that if they get the right people on that ticket, that it could be something different this time.
Interesting. I don't know, Jeannie. Maybe Aaron Rodgers could redefine the role and be like a working vice president, still play the games on the weekends, you know, maybe a little less policy that time of year, do Joe Rogan on the side, deliver the message for this new administration. We just figured a lot out, I feel like.
Yeah, you are really selling it, Joe. I think that's the way to go. And, you know, maybe it'll start a trend. We'll have vice presidents who are doing 2-3 other jobs at the same time.
Everyone on this show knows Jesse Ventura would be more fun, Lester. Let's admit it right now.
He's got a great screen presence. He was terrific in Predator, as I recall, and he was.
Thank you. Yes.
Maybe not great as governor of Minnesota, but pretty good on TV and in the movies.
The Ain't Got Time to Bleed campaign, I can see it and hear it. Kaylee is not on board with me on this. Great panel, Lester. Thank you, Lester Munson at BGR, Jeannie Shanzano, Bloomberg Politics contributor. Thank you for humoring me. Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.